So before we get started, make the announcement. Number one, film screening, Stand Up for Medina. We were talking about it. Went freaking fantastic. Had it at the Bootless Theater in Wilmington. Had a great panel discussion after the film screening. We don't record it because you have to be there. I don't like recording it. I'm not putting it on platforms. You go or you don't go. I'm not here to, you know, spoon feed you.
No.
Exactly. So, we were able to split evenly almost $1,000 each for the Delaware Call and Heal Palestine. I think it's $950, I think it came out to each. Nice little gift to two good causes. Now, if you're hearing this, if you're one of our sort of 75 to 100 pure sickos.
The 8 a.m. sickos.
You're listening to this within the first 12 hours of its release. Yeah, well. But there are some 8 a.m. sickos. There's a few dozen. But if you're listening to this within a day of its release on Friday, Medina is having a comedy special. There may be tickets available. By the time you hear this, there may not be. I don't know. I'm just telling you there's another event. Go look at it. And if there's tickets available, go get them. If they're sold out, you know what? You missed it. In a shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way beast, I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. Welcome. So here's the setup for tonight. I've been setting this up for a couple of weeks because we've had a lot of legislators coming in. Had Ray Moore, Sophie Phillips. Then we went to Leg Hall. And this was meant to be Representative Frank Burns. Unfortunately, Frank is under the weather. Is going to need to reschedule.
Marked A for absent.
You know what? He has three sick days available.
Totally fine.
We call it PTO here, but whatever. The good news is, I'm sure Frank's going to make an incredible recovery. The other good news is, I was kind of struggling because a lot of shit has gone down in the last few weeks. We did cover the Michaelina story. We slid that in all of these episodes, but I was trying to figure out ways to like crowbar in all of my like points as I do with the interview with a representative because I know everybody would listen to it. But I also know that like I'm not looking to get anybody in trouble necessarily other than myself. So I was like, I don't know how much I'm going to do. But now that Frank unfortunately cannot make it tonight, now we can rip and run with the crew. Bill, hello.
Good evening, Rob.
Carl, hello.
Hello.
There was some talk when the list of topics came out for this bitch sesh. There was some talk that perhaps we would have to clear some information through Carl. We're not clearing any information. He's just going to cut it out anyway if we don't want to talk about it. But I want to start with a few incidents that I think demonstrate the full meltdown that some of the Democratic Party are in.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. These all happened in public. So I really feel like it's totally fair game to just mention some people taking some big L's in public. Number one, Mimi getting her mic shut off at the party meeting or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't know until after it happened. I still don't know under what circumstances it happened. But the fact that the Speaker of the House goes to our hometown, like Democratic Party, starts a fucking melee and gets her mic shut off, that just in and of itself is fucking hilarious. Carl gave me a little bit of background, but not really. Has there been any sort of other... I know Steve Tanzer was involved in some fashion yelling at her.
Yes. Pointing. Pointing dramatically. I don't know. I was glad Steve did that.
Were you in the room?
Oh God, no.
Oh, okay.
No,
so you saw
watching
video.
The same clip that everyone else has.
Oh, see, I haven't seen the clip.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible. Oh. Maybe we'll play a little bit of the audio here.
Yeah,
I'll see if I can find a good version of it.
You have to take this stand at this point so that you can regain the trust in this room. Whether people voted for you, whether people voted for Edelman, whether people voted for Azure, stuff, it doesn't even matter anymore. Because if we cannot get through this vote and be able to come together and work together, we're already losing. We're already losing. So forget who's on the ballot. It's about the transparency, it's about the accountability, and it's about rebuilding the trust in this room. Because if we don't rebuild the trust of the Democratic Party, we will be in the minority. We have a problem on our hands.
Madam Speaker, you are out of order. You are not in the process. You are not recognized by the chair. You are out of order.
That whole process is not out of order, Kat.
That's right.
You can't.
And it's the stupidest thing, and Carl was trying to explain it to me last week, and he was like, there's really no explanation. It's just like you're running the meeting wrong. Like, I'm supposed to do that. Like, there's one parliamentarian was dismissed, and then they had to go to the second parliamentarian.
No, she just left on her own accord.
She's left on another thing.
But was it because of problems during the meeting?
No, she had a prior engagement halfway through when the meeting.
Then why would you schedule that person to be the parliamentarian?
How do you get a parliamentarian if you got to pick up your kids from the Little League?
Because that felt to me like it was intentional. Me knowing nothing about anything.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I just thought that was a funny detail.
For context, I also was not there. I was at another meeting that morning, and then suddenly several people started texting me. And so I got a 360 view of what was going on through that, but I was not there.
Well, maybe we take a step back, and I may misremember as well, but the purpose of the meeting, I think this was at Appaquinimic High School or one of the schools down there, and was the purpose, Carl, to elect folks for the convention?
Yeah, so it was the Newcastle County meeting, I believe they were electing leadership.
Okay.
So, like, new chair, vice chair, there's two vice chairs, secretary, all that stuff.
And it's being conducted by the current chair.
Yes. Cool. Which is, that's normal, but it's also kind of a weird situation when they're running again, and then they start doing things that people interpret as unfair.
I love it. I love everything I'm hearing right now. I mean, I don't know if Kat did any. Like, here's the thing. I love that. It's like the Elizabeth Warren. Here's the thing. In my view, no matter what anybody did, the people who she did it against would cry foul. That's the cool thing, because Dems are in disarray. I mean, we had, what did we have, a couple of months ago, maybe 6 months ago, people filing grievances against the Wilmington person, Cassandra Marshall, who's now running for like a state or something. Is she doing something? Anyway, it's just like the whole thing is a joke. And so anything that makes it look embarrassing, I think it's great.
Yeah, I'm like getting close to starting to call them the Democrat Party. This is classic Democrat Party.
This is classic. This is classic Demo Rats.
Yes,
this is what they do. Yeah, I mean, I'm on record that we shouldn't be fucking with these people at all. It's a joke. Like, yeah, I mean, they're arguing about who's going to be the leader. I guess so you can, like, the other thing, Meyer was like, Meyer has endorsed somebody for the statewide party, so he'll organize, but I guess he won't if they don't. Like, the whole thing's a joke. Like, why are we spending any fucking time with any resources or time? I mean, you weren't there, but why are people getting engaged in this? Do they like it too? Do some of our comrades and faves, they can't get enough of this shit? Or is it just us on the outside looking in?
I think it's us on the outside looking in. I think that some people just really love rules and concocting this labyrinth of rules and regs and being the boss of things. You know, I kind of picked this up. You know, I was in the at the firehouse in Bellefonte when we, elected. Or I guess we appointed the candidates to run for the two Senate districts.
We picked two senators
in a, like a, I don't know, like a large first grade class would, I guess. Talk of number two pencils and passing back in your note cards. And we were on opposite sides of a big room. It was pretty childish, honestly. But I think that's the way that they did it. And I think that they enjoy kind of concocting this impenetrable... set of rules And then just, and honestly, and to, this kind of goes back to the city of Wilmington issue you mentioned, they like just proceeding with such a brisk pace that like there's almost not time to be like, hey, wait, pause. Can, what just happened there? Did we just make a decision? Because you kind of just mumbled and then said, okay, it's done. You know what I mean? And I think that that's, I don't know, it's sounds pretty democratic to me.
I sort of asked this question of Carl, and I don't know, like, really what the answer is, but I've heard people talk about, like, there are some levers and gears within the state system. Like, there's, like, it's like the Glengarry, Glenn Ross leads. We got to get those leads. Like, whatever it is, it's like, we got to get Vote Builder. We got to get this, or we're doomed. And I guess they're all arguing about the data in some fashion. Is that what everybody's scared about? Like, if a corporate institutionalist is in there, they'll hide the data. Is that what it is?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want people. Is this? Can I legitimately say that anybody who's worried about that needs to stop? And I don't want to hear any of that sissy bullshit.
I think it'd be a bigger deal if we didn't have another alternative now.
Yes, and you know, I feel like we. Look. I've been saying it and saying it. More and more people are saying it every day. Yeah, that's the cool thing, is there's an impetus sort of for this meltdown. There's a thing behind it, which is the Working Families Party. And people are scared. And they should be, actually, however scared they are or mad, they should be more scared. And this leads me into the second thing that happened in public. Just gonna bring it up. There was a Working Families Party event, meeting, like, I guess it was like candidates or people who are going to do election campaign, just like info session, like primer, 101, candidates 101. Is that fair to say, candidates 101?
Yeah.
Candidates 101. So it's just like not even really like partisan necessarily. It's just like we're just giving you the info, you know, and they have it at the Route 9 library. And I don't know how many people came, but there's a big group of people in Route 9 Library. And in walks Frank Cook, old Cookie, our bud. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but he drug one of the patriarchs of Wilmington, J Street Sr., out, you know, in public to sit down there. And then when this meeting started, they interrupt the meeting and be like, I don't think you should be having this here. This is like, do you have a better idea of exactly what was said? But like, what was said?
It was basically that gist of, this man built this library, so it's very disrespectful to have this here.
So it's disrespectful to talk about, you know, what a candidate would have to do for office in Delaware at the library?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to say this. This is what I'm saying. We in the community know that J Street Sr. is of advanced age. He still makes all his meetings via Zoom. And when he does come out, like he came out for the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board meeting last year, he makes his public comment and then, you know, retires. To drag him out for that little show that Cookie did, I think is fucking elder abuse, in my opinion. Like, that move... That just shows you that, like, I don't know if he's checking his shorts after the day's over, check your underpants, because you must be having some sort of, like, shit in your pants every day. You must be going through pants like, phew, nobody's business. If you're bringing out a patriarch of Wilmington to try to intimidate potential candidates for office. Well, guess what, Cookie? We're not fucking intimidated. I think you probably already know that. That's my guess, that you already know that.
This is the first I'm hearing about this, so I'm going to assume that the group allowed the gentleman to speak, and then did they just like peace out? They're like, we made our point. They didn't stay for the info session, I assume.
Frank Cook did.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
We had a great conversation afterwards.
That's good. So I'll just contrast that with, you know, with issue number one that we brought up, where we had the head of the Newcastle County Democrats cut the mic of the Speaker of the House, who was, I think, not complaining necessarily, but speaking for at least half the crowd of that room, saying that like a lot of these votes feel illegitimate and there's some confusion about the pace that things are proceeding along with. So, you know, give it up to WFP for
actually having a public meeting and hearing somebody out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. What anyone would, like, any reasonable person should do.
Absolutely.
And even if the message, I think, is in poor taste coming from the representative.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I agree with everything you just said. The fact that he stayed, I think, is a testament to them really trying to figure this out.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, feeling around, like, how do I walk around the house with my hands out and so I don't run into anything? So, you know, fair enough on that. And as far as, like, the whatever happened at the party, the county party meeting, don't take any of this to take, we're taking sides. No, we want you all to lose. We want you all to look bad.
Yeah.
Disarray. Yeah. Like, go through your official, like, second. Okay. What? Second. You know.
Who RSVP'd using Mobilize between the hours of 8 p.m. and 4 a.m.? Because technically you make quorum.
Second.
Passed.
We're gonna suspend parliamentary procedure here. We're gonna go to Robert's Rules of Order. Like, yeah, I don't. Yeah, Kat's probably wrong. Like, I don't know. I don't care. Like I said, we shouldn't be fucking with these people at all. They don't have our best interest at heart. They don't want to do anything that we want to do. They want to run meetings and be the person to run the meetings and like be like, we have Vote Builder. Oh, we can pick who goes with Sarah McBride to the conference or whatever. Who cares? Stop it. Stop it now.
Sucks that we're talking about this and not, like, Delaware being on the brink of enacting no-excuse absentee voting, for example. Haven't heard a peep about that lately. I'm sure there's a bill pending. I know that there's two legs, and I know that there's two legs, right? Because that's
Constitutional amendment, bro.
We're in the first leg.
Right, we're in the first leg, yeah, because they threw
out... there's two legs.
There is two legs.
Sorry, but yeah, it's just, I mean, that's my point. It's like, I don't know... Yeah, there's just like a lot of meaningful legislation that could be passed at the moment. But I think we want to, you know, hold the record for, you know, having the Democratic trifecta for as long as possible without really, and being like the only state left on the Eastern Seaboard that, you know, doesn't have that, for example.
Yeah, I'm, again, because I'm sort of like, you know, I have a lot of sort of work. Carl and I were just down at Leg Hall. You know, we have shit going on in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, on the side of the scenes, all that stuff. And anything that comes up with legislation is just such a joke. I mean, they can amend the Constitution every year for the Elon Musks and Jeff Bezoses and Zuckerbergs of the world, and they can't, like, literally cannot do any other thing. Like, maybe they can pass a watered-down, you know, police reform 3 years ago. Or, you know, a SB 10, which we talked about last week, which is a good bill, but it's like, I mean, it's means-tested, however you want to call it, means-tested. You know, as long as we've tortured you long enough and we feel like, okay, your torture meets the criteria, we can let you apply to get out. Like, that's classic. They can't do anything. They're afraid. They're not built for it, you know, and I'm sick because another session is you know, the end of the session is in sight now.
Yeah,
you know, it's chugging along. I mean, and fucking nothing's happened. Probably exaggerating here,
but there's like 8.5 working days left.
Yeah, it's like nothing has happened, and yeah, I mean, maybe a few things will pass. You know, again, I'm not really interested in talking about. Oh, we got the death and death with dignity thing. I'm glad that it finally seems like it's passed for people who want to, you know, have that option. But like to pretend that's yeah, it took 15 years because you're all inept boobs. And now we're like, well, we got that done. Wow, great. The only thing that gets done is filling in this Excel spreadsheet. You know, and then making sure people can use the corporate code the way that they want to. And that's pretty much it. I mean, look, Carl can only talk about the minimum wage bill for, you know, for only a couple more years, probably. Maybe two more. I mean, that's what you, that's your go-to. But that's going to run, that's
paid family the, medical time, leave, the time's going right to run out.
What's that?
Paid family medical leave, Tens right to rep. Legal weed.
Legal weed? We don't have, can you buy weed? I tried to buy it today, and
you can buy weed.
I mean, of course I have tons of weed. I'm talking, you know what I mean. I'm being facetious. I'm like, we don't have legal weed, bro. We don't have it. You know, I guess we have state employees have family medical leave, and or everybody can buy into it in some fashion.
I think beginning next year.
Beginning next year. So we
and
will have.
And we also, I mean, not every
we
employer.
We had bail reform, and then we didn't have it. Remember that?
Yeah.
Was fun. That was a fun time. Yeah, I'm already, you know, I'm not easily impressed. And when you hear the same couple things, hey, maybe we'll get that. Maybe we'll get family medical leave next year. I mean, that's what the law says. That'd be cool.
I mean, hey, maybe you won't have a Senate supermajority next year. I mean, hypothetically. I don't know how long we could kind of rest on that. Not us, but I don't know how long they can rest on.
I don't know.
If you're not willing to wield power in a certain way.
Well, I want to be very clear. I'm in open revolt.
Yeah.
Let it be known.
We're in a fiscal note crisis, after all.
Yeah, look, we don't know what's going to happen. We could lose everything. We don't know.
I did really enjoy last week's episode. I don't know where I would go and nominate this, but I feel like you guys deserve some sort of like minor journalism award.
Yeah, Delaware Press
for the SB10.
Baby.
Yeah, there you go.
It was
fantastic. Jess and I both like separately, like sort of like mentioned that to each other.
I got a lot of good feedback on it, honestly. And I mean, Carl did a great job with it. Sounded brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
The equipment ran to a T, you know. And we were lucky too because, you know, I work with Tanya, I work with Kevin. And so we were able to talk to sort of people who were there. It was great seeing, like, Medina. I love Timeless Thomas. I just saw him just walking around.
Oh, yeah.
He came in and gave us that little bit. But
We got to turn this from a Flintstones bill to a Jetsons bill.
Is that what he said?
I think so.
I think that makes that sounds like something he would have said.
And I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I get it. I get it. Yeah. I mean, I hope that passes. I'll look at the end and see what I think about the shit that they did.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I can just tell you that I can't imagine me being very impressed. I suppose if we get the tax brackets, which, what do you think? 10% a chance we get that?
You got taken out from committee. Don't know exactly why.
Taken out? What does that mean, taken out?
Removed. It was in committee and then the sponsor withdrew it.
That's not a good sign.
So there we go. Now it's 5%. If that stock's plummeting.
I smell a substitute coming.
SS2. You know what? We're going to lower taxes on everybody because it'll generate more revenue. It's like supply side economics. Yeah, that's done. What else was going on?
Oh, Inspector General also is.
Inspector General, yeah.
Which is bipartisan, except for House leadership, apparently.
Yeah, so no Inspector General.
And that's another, like, 15-year trek through the woods.
Yeah,
that's just
for
like,
nothing. For, like, yeah. Now it's not the right time. We'll just make it up. Oh, you know what? I should have gone through the Black Caucus. That was, like, the judicial records bill we had for 2 years. And they're like, oh, you know what? We forgot. It was. I lost my homework. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, my biggest problem is the idea that we're getting somewhere because we're not getting anywhere. This is being reflected at the national level. You know, we're not getting anywhere. So when the backlash comes, we're going to be like, oh, we should have done something. Well, I don't know. Democrats are still like, well, we're still not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't care. So, yeah, I mean, if you don't care, I don't care. You know, come to the Route 9 library and cry more. All right, let's move on. Do we want to do like the code, the zip code, Wilmington?
Do you want to do sure.
It? Okay. I mean, yeah, we'll give. We have to give.
A few. Yeah, I mean, I'll preface by saying I didn't find this like particularly abhorrent, but we did sort of. I want to say back in the, I don't know. I'm trying to think in the Twitter / X the Everything app sort of feral days. I don't know if you were still anonymous when we were sort of like the Sarah Benedict Duguid days. All right. So we can say that, right? Sarah Benedict Duguid, Benjamin DuPont is the, I think, is a co-founder of this. It's a nonprofit in the city of Wilmington called Zip Code Wilmington. And I believe that the gist of their sort of arrangement is that they get a cohort of folks to come in, learn coding. The entity has pre-existing relationships with financial institutions throughout the city and state and probably nationally, globally, who the hell knows. And then rather than those employers like Barclays, Capital One, whomever, hiring employees to teach them skills that they need to succeed in their sort of like tech jobs, we're going to outsource that to the nonprofit who's going to collect a tuition from the students as well. That the student, and then the students will be placed with the banks, and then they go from there.
Classic middleman routine. Got to interject yourself as the middleman.
Right. And it's also it's like, it sounds great in years 1 through 5, but the ultimate goal is to, I guess, increase the talent pool of folks who can do the exact same kind of coding so that we could eventually pay lower wages.
Flood the market
with the human capital, I believe they refer to it as.
Wouldn't they?
Yeah. Look forward to maybe... your analysis. So this is
the first thing I want to mention. Well, you go ahead and I'll mention.
It's important. You gave a very measured description of this.
Okay.
And then I think it's important to then jump right into the headline for the op-ed.
We helped Wilmington baristas become coders. We transformed the city.
Get the fuck out of here, first of all.
I mean, they did. The city's unrecognizable.
Haven't you noticed the hustle and bustle?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that didn't... I haven't, actually.
Every time I walk into a brouhaha or a Starbucks, even a Dunkin', they're just like laptops strewn about.
Yeah, don't you always see them in that one building? Where their headquarters is?
Is it?
You know.
It's interesting. So I'll give you my first thing. Like, it's interesting that I've been downtown a lot in the last few weeks for different things. And I think I told a story, I don't know if it was on the mic or not, about when I worked at MBNA downtown way back in the late 90s. I believe Market Street Mall was still the mall, and I remember walking from the office for a division meeting, a division all-hands meeting that was going to be at the Grand Opera House, and the city was packed with people. And now, as Carl said, it's unrecognizable because there's a bunch of terribly constructed bad architecture we have to look at from Buccini Pollen Group. So yeah, in that sense, it looks very different. But there's nobody. It's still a goddamn ghost town. So I don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah, but there's a lot of blue-haired coders with pronouns walking around now. Or maybe they lose the pronouns once they learn how to code.
Maybe. The other thing is, why is there 18 bylines on this goddamn op-ed?
I'm assuming they're the board of directors.
The full board?
Yeah, I don't know.
Porter Shutt, Jim Stewart, Michael Worthen, and Sarah Benedict Duguid.
Ben, and just remember, Ben, I mean, we're all joking now. You can go back and listen to the...
We're gonna write
episode.
It up. We're gonna put. I've been talking with Kirsten about this. We need to like write it up in the call.
I wanted to wait
just in case he decides to run for anything.
Well, that's the thing. That the cool thing is, we can just tell him like he can. Literally, he can't. He can never run for any office now because this is going to be so embarrassing. I mean, Spotlight has this too because I shared it with a buddy. Like, it's gonna be incredible, and he cannot. Run for off. He can't do anything. He can't even do. I mean, he can do stuff Chris Kenny's doing, maybe. But, like, yeah, he can't. It's awesome. But, hey, if you guys want to write it up, fucking write it up. I don't give a shit. I just think it's cool to hold it over his head as well.
Well,
we could release one tweet at a time.
Yeah.
Chronologically. Or just tell the story of about a particular exchange, because that's the funny thing, too, is, and again, just to catch people up quickly, go back and listen to the original episode, but Ben DuPont had, like, a sock puppet account that was, like, interacting with local sort of leftist, maybe Jessica Rain campaign people and me at the podcast and all of this stuff. And then when we sussed it out that it was him, we downloaded all the information, and then I sent him an email to his work. Basically, I forget exactly what it said, but it was like, we got your ass. And then everything came down. And as everything came down, Kirsten had just like finished like the file transfer. It was like a Mission Impossible. It was like it got to 100%. She's like, I got it. So yeah, we have everything, every fake, stupid like lie about like. Well, oh, it's gonna be
one of the lies was zip code related, right? Wasn't it like my nephew or my son?
Oh yeah, his nephew was like addicted to fentanyl.
Well, there were several nephews.
Anyway, we can't get into it right now. You got to go back to the story. But anyway, Ben, please run for office. Please do it.
10 years ago, we launched Zip Code Wilmington with a simple premise that with 90 days of intensive coding instruction, we could turn untapped talent into job-ready software engineers, and in doing so, spark opportunity for individuals and renewal for a region. We did not launch Zip Code Wilmington because of our belief in charity. We launched it because we believed in human capital, in the idea that talent is widely distributed, but opportunity is not.
Actually, human capital is worse than charity. Do they realize that actually that's worse than the other thing? Yeah. I just like how like it's all actually fake now too, because doesn't just AI just do all of this stuff now? Because it sounds like the op-ed got written through AI as well.
That's a great point.
So can't you just maybe learn how to code through ChatGPT? Are they coding ChatGPT? I don't know.
God, not that I know him personally, but Ben is the most, like, I guarantee you he does, like, text to his kids through ChatGPT. Like, he's the most ChatGPT dude imaginable. I just need to tell this anecdote, too, before I forget. Whenever there's, like, a Nazi-adjacent new character in our lives on X, the Everything app, you'll go to their account. The accounts that follow are Ben DuPont, the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, and then this one guy who used to run the Wilmington Housing, the Land Conservancy, the land bank. who was I think who got in trouble for stealing $25,000 or something.
Oh yeah.
So it's always those three who follow like the most abhorrent accounts. But anyway, no coincidence there. Back in 2014, America faced what we called a real deficit in software and computer coding skills. This shortage was already dragging on job growth and national competitiveness. Companies needed programmers, and Delaware, like most places, didn't have enough. At the time, over 1,700 open IT jobs were posted in Wilmington in just 12 months. Many were filled in other cities. So we created Zip Code Wilmington, a nonprofit coding bootcamp built to fill that gap quickly, affordably, and at scale. With support from over 20 employers, our first students, many with no prior coding experience, sat down for 8-hour days, 5 days a week, for 12 intense weeks of software training. Over the years, we've updated our curriculum based on the needs of employers and the changes in technology, and many students have moved to Delaware to take advantage of the program. How has Zip Code succeeded? 10 years later, the results speak volumes. Zip Code Wilmington has graduated more than 740 students, with 85% placed into direct hire, full-time software development roles. Our grads are working for major employers like JPMorgan Chase, Barclays, Capital One, Apple, Google, Amazon, and Doge. Tesla.
God, you got our ass on that one.
Many began as baristas, line cooks, or warehouse workers. 2 years after graduation, the average alum earns more than $100K, and cumulative alumni salary increases now exceed $140 million. Not really sure how that's calculated, but...
I'm going to have to look into these numbers.
Yeah. Zip coders aren't just filling jobs, they're remaking lives. They're building secure middle-class futures, lifting families, and often becoming mentors, managers, and even founders.
Founders. Shut the fuck up.
One graduate, previously working in retail, now leads a development team at a Fortune 100 company. Another who'd never written a line of code before Zip Code is now working on mission-critical systems at a major bank.
He also was addicted to fentanyl. That's Sarah Benedict Duguid's nephew.
These stories are inspiring, but they also validate a deeper idea. Skills-based, employer-connected education works. And in a time when student debt, four-year degrees, and skills gaps dominate national debate, Zip Code Wilmington offers a proven model that's fast, focused, and fair. What made it work? Three things. Urgency. We trained for the skills employers needed now. Accountability. Our curriculum was shaped directly by hiring partners. Affordability. There are flexible options for tuition depending upon income, as well as scholarships for qualified Delaware residents, and the program is 90 days. Mono means one, and rail equals rail.
Now,
that concludes your intensive two-week course.
Wait. So the only real number, if I missed it, let me know, was that of the whatever number of people who've been through, 85% of them have been placed in jobs. But how many are in jobs right now?
That's a great question. I mean, they're making $140 million in salary increases.
Well, yeah, but how many of them? The ones that are working are averaging $100,000, but they're very slippery with the number, and the rest of it's this completely Grok, is this true?
Right. All right. These stories are inspiring, but they also validate a deeper idea. Skills-based, employer-connected education works. And in a time when student debt, four-year degrees, and skills gaps dominate national debate, Zip Code Wilmington offers a proven model that's fast, focused, and fair. And you know what? I already read that paragraph, but when I started, I was like, this might just be a new one. I don't remember.
I think let's...
It all sounds the same.
I mean... Do we see what they're getting at here with that paragraph, though?
No, what do you think?
Yeah, read it again.
Skills-based employer-connected education works.
Employer-connected education
yes.
works.
And in a time when student debt, four-year degrees, and skills gaps dominate national debate, Zip Code Wilmington offers a proven model that's fast, focused, and fair. And then they specifically are talking about, we're training for the skills employers need now. Our curriculum was shaped by our hiring partners.
Of course.
So the emphasis on four-year degrees, student debt, as oh, look at all these bad things. But we have a good model. Something, education that is controlled directly by the employers.
Right. Who you're not employed by yet.
And it's funny because all you have is whatever you want to say about credentials, I'm not going to sit here and support, oh, you got to have this on your CV, blah, 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 blah. But you can have you could have worked somewhere wherever and kind of, been trained in something. But here's you get a 90-day certificate because Barclays needed people to program SAS or Python or something, right? So they need somebody to do that now. They probably aren't even employed anymore. So if they're not employed anymore, what do they go on to the next place that's not a partner with their town script, their Ford money or Ford bucks? And they're like, will you hire me with this certificate? Well, no, I wasn't a partner in fucking Zip Code Wilmington, was I? And so now you're just fucked because you don't have general, you just got the 90-day, hey, we can place you at fucking DuPont so you can,
Have a temp job, essentially.
Maybe. We don't know. It's unclear.
Right. Until it's offshored.
Yeah. It sounds like a terrible model. It's a good way to put people in short term. Yeah, it's you probably get them. I still get them, even now. Recruiter emails.
Mm-hmm.
Still hooked up with stuff. So once in a while, one will get through. it's a big job. But it's 1 year, 6 months, 2 years. It's all contract work.
Yeah.
It's all banks and financial institution and people hiring people who know how to do risk analytics,
mm-hmm.
but for one project for a year. That's what they do now. So, all of this shit is very unclear. I think Carl put his finger right on it. It's all very shady language. And when you pick it apart, it's actually gross.
If we want inclusive growth, national competitiveness, and real mobility, we need more zip codes. The model is here. The results are real. The lives have been changed. And the best part? We're just getting started. So,
I'll tell you what.
I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat here and say the DuPont family has a long history with education here in Delaware. Back in 1919... Pierre DuPont was one of the first ones to update the school code and directly donated millions of dollars to build public school houses or public school buildings across the state. The difference is back then, 100 years ago, he gave that away to the state. I have a feeling that that is not the goal here.
Yeah, we talked about this actually on the way back from Dover, because you're doing a lot of this research now. It's like, okay, we're in the new Gilded Age, but there's this adage, people probably know it, that at least in the first Gilded Age, they built libraries.
Right.
Like, they built universities and slabs and all of this stuff. So, like, and they were public, you know, public things. Yeah, nobody's doing that now. That's over.
Well, and you have the situation right now nationally where you talk to anybody that works at a university, they can tell you it's a complete nightmare. Because any red state right now, if they have a public university, they're not going to in 5 years, functionally. Florida was the first. I know Indiana had some bad situations, West Virginia. They're all basically tearing up their public universities brick by brick. And even in blue states, like University of Delaware, all of these organizations are run by a very similar related group of trustees that are largely right-wing freaks that have very specific visions of how these things should work that are not necessarily relating to classic public education. Especially, you know, you look at what they're doing around cracking down on Palestine protests right now. It's very similar to what you'd see 50 years ago when they were gutting the NYU or the New York University system, the California University system, based off these free speech and Vietnam protests. And what I see here is, hey, higher education is basically ruined, right? So, you know, you're going to go into a bunch of debt. It's not even going to be that good, yada, yada. So we need something else. So why not have a nonprofit education program that is directly subsidized by employers and guided by employers that are essentially working as direct job placement programs into these employers that are looking to get as many applicants as possible to drive down wages.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been happening like indirectly forever. I mean, I was a computer science major. I graduated in 2020. And if you look at like starting salaries for computer science majors over the last 10 to 15 years, it's starting to go down because the same reason I got into computer science was the same reason a lot of people did, which is that everybody growing up said like, oh, you got to do computer science. You got to do computer science.
It's all computers.
Companies that needed computer science majors dropped millions and millions of dollars into these computer science programs to increase the supply, and they'll cloak it in the language of equity or opportunity because, oh, it's the baristas and the line workers and all these people who never had these opportunities before are now getting these opportunities. And it's like, sure, I think they should have that opportunity if they want, but, you know, it's just like the 90s Clintonism, just job retraining thing with the end goal of reducing labor costs, as you were saying earlier. And the vision of Zip Code Wilmington, we're just getting started, is we're going to replace...
Is that a threat?
Higher education. Yeah. I take it as a threat.
Yeah.
We're going to replace higher education with these employer nonprofit-sponsored bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah, you just go into the... you go into the financial contracting fucking pipeline, and it just becomes like it is the one you miss too is like the warehouse worker, like that hits home here too, obviously, because we have all this shit here.
Well, that's what I was thinking. The first thing, like, if someone loses their contract job with Capital One, you have to go to Amazon then until you can find something else.
Yeah, they're building.
Like, I would guarantee you that there are alumni from this program.
How many alumni of Zip Code Wilmington have the certificate work at Amazon in Newcastle?
And I'm not.
I'd love to have that piece of information.
Yeah. And that is, like, I think a reality, and that's not to belittle. And I also don't want to put out that, like, we're not belittling.
It's to belittle how this is being sold to us.
Yes.
Just to be clear, thank you for bringing
that. Yeah, I should have prefaced the article with that, too.
Yeah, and again, it's a good time to at least mention it now. This is not to belittle anybody who did the program themselves.
Good for them.
Not individual choices. Yeah. And it's certainly not to belittle anybody in the that's a barista or a warehouse worker or a line.
And also, if you put down some fucking coin to get in here, too, I think it's probably a few thousand or several thousand dollars.
Oh, but tuition, like, indentured servitude available.
Yes.
You know, that's like there are indentured servitude is available for probably a much smaller fee.
Yeah, I thought it was very telling that they say, I think they use a middle class life or middle class lifestyle in this article or the op-ed.
Yeah.
I bet 5 years ago they would have said middle upper class or upper middle class. To Carl's point that like computer engineering, that was like perceived as a sort of you know, six-figure minimum job.
And that's what they advertise it as, too, as right. like, oh, everybody's the average graduate still making is making over $100,000, which it's not impossible. Like, there's still plenty of software engineers that make a good amount of money, but, you know, between the increase in supply and AI taking away a lot of, like, the lower-level things, I mean, I know a lot of people who are, like, white-collar workers, and some of them are computer scientists who have been laid off specifically in the last couple of years because their jobs, probably not adequately, but are being done by some combination of outsourcing and artificial intelligence. That's the goal, certainly.
Yeah.
Hey, but they can. They're poised to make that shift, don't you know?
Yeah.
That's fucking. It's grim. I mean, it's funny. Like, learn to code became like this goofy. Like, what are you gonna just learn? You know, what are you gonna teach a coal miner to code? But they're like, oh, sure, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sure can. If there's money in it, we can. Now, what I wanted to ask you is if you could elaborate in closing. I did want to talk about one worldwide issue because I think it's important. But you mentioned, I guess Jess said, that in big cities, celebrities are celebrities. In Los Angeles and Chicago, New York, and in cities, it's usually like athletes or people like the news person.
I think Philly in particular is like very news personality focused.
News personality.
I remember that from my time there.
Yeah,
and growing up in the metro.
Yeah, like six.
I remember my parents saw Pat Shiraki at a restaurant in Maine a few years ago. And, you know, they still talk about it.
Oh, yeah. James Gardner, whatever his name was.
Jim Gardner.
And athletes, obviously. But, like, in a place like our rinky-dink, we don't have that. And the only people that are sort of in the news on a regular basis are, like, house reps and senators.
Yeah.
And, like, the county council. So they take on this era of, like, they're holding on to some, you know, Cat has to cut off a microphone and Frank Cook has to try to intimidate everybody and all this stuff. Like, they got to do all of this stuff because they're in the spotlight, so to speak. And I didn't know, we didn't really talk about, like, how to sort of flesh this out, but I thought it was a fascinating idea because I think it's sort of true. And so it's like, I have to accept the fact that, yes, this group of incredibly vain airheads, we really do, like, watch everything they do. It's just, you can't get away from it because it's just in the news. It becomes part of the story here because we don't have athletes. We don't have anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. And it's, like, embarrassing. Like, it's incredibly embarrassing to admit that.
I know.
Because
I'm not happy about
because it. Because if you, I think, realistically, I don't know, if you walked up to the average Delawarean on, you know, the part of Kirkwood Highway that runs through Ellesmere, and you're like at Wawa there, are you like, do you know who your state representative is? And they're not going to know, like maybe 5-10%.
Right.
So I don't know if it's just this, I'm calling myself like an 8 a.m. sicko of sorts right now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they are the kind of the closest thing that if you're into this kind of stuff, that we have to celebs.
Yeah. And I guess you're correct. It's not that everybody would sort of know their representative or senator or like county council person or whatever. But I think if you kind of just do have to follow the news a little bit at a minimum, but that's it. You would just see a name or you'd be like, oh, the council's doing this or, you know, that Meyer, he's no good, whatever. You're sort of, these are the only people that you might be able to talk about, or you're just talking about Philly, you know, or you're talking about Philly sports.
Like, yeah.
The only things Delawareans sort of share, if they share anything, is like understanding that, like, I don't know, That Przicki is a real shithead or something, you know. I don't know, but it was an interesting concept because, like I said, it's incredibly embarrassing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes sort of to the other side of the spectrum as well because there are very committed, you know, like right wing sickos who need to have their screen time taken away because they spend 22 hours a day on Eric Morrison's Facebook page. And I think they know more about some of these, you know, local celebs than we do.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, is like I'm not on Facebook, and there does seem to be like tons of interactions there that I'm not privy to unless it's so egregious that it gets like it gets cut and paste into like a private group chat. And it's, but people are having meltdowns on Facebook too.
Yeah.
They're losing it there because I don't think people are, you know, we're talking about they don't know what they're doing. You know, like whatever amount of celebrity or fame or political capital they have, they don't know how to use it. That's just why nothing really ever gets done. They can raise some money or stay in good with enough people to sort of maintain, you know, not be the one shutting off the mic, not getting the mic shut off. But that's about as far as it goes. So it's like, okay, like I guess you're the top dog in this fight, huh? So, because you can shut the microphone off and not be the one that gets it shut, you know. I guess in this, so Carl in this situation would be the one who could do it. He runs this fucking show.
That's what everybody's worried about.
That's true.
Okay, last big topic, and this sort of goes. There is a little bit of a intersection here with like the Democrat Party in disarray. Mm-hmm. Because I talked to Sarah McBride when she was in here. We talked about this. Harvey wrote something in the call about this. There's this idea that we're not going to reckon with our mistakes because, you know, we already are having trouble navigating these political waters. We can't start admitting we made mistakes. So I do want to point out one of those things is about the occupation of Palestine by the Zionists. I think it's pretty clear now what direction this is going in. Just this week, maybe Carl will cut in this quote because it was an incredible quote by President Trump. I'll call him President. Used to call him Donald. Mm-hmm. Now he calls me President. It's so nice. The respect. It's respect. Carl will cut it in here, but he was like, we hit him with everything we had.
Hmm.
And the Houthis sustained it. And you cannot put them down. He was like, it's bravery. It's a lot of bravery. We hit him hard. And Ansar Allah, I love that the name of the Houthi party, Ansar Allah, do you know what it means?
No.
It means God's helpers. Hmm. It's the word for help. I was like, that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
So the Houthis, I guess we dropped a couple of, multi-million dollar aircraft into the sea trying to evade rockets and stuff, too. And so...
That was Chowda Hill's ship, that aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Remember when he was kind of like the epic Navy guy a few months? I don't know. Was this last year? Who can remember? His name was Chowda Hill.
Yeah, so guess what? They dropped a couple of big planes into the drink. Yeah, they were doing serpentine around Houthi missiles. So Trump made a deal with them and said, you know what? We're bombing the hell out of you. It's not helping. You can still hit the Ben Gurion airport with the missile. You can still do, you know, basically stop traffic in the Persian Gulf and fire on our ships, and we lose planes and water. We'll just cut a deal with you. And the Houthi said, that's fine. We'll let every American ship go through. We're still bombing Israel, and we're still going to attack Israeli-owned ships. And guess what? We made the deal. So you got to give it up for the prez, and you really got to give it up for God's helpers, because they're really doing it. And there's one other thing: everybody has to go I'm trying to get him on the show, but it's very difficult. The war correspondent at Drop Site, Jeremy Scahill,
mm-hmm.
Has been in contact with Hamas leaders and other resistance leaders for months. There's a huge interview with a Hamas leader on Drop Site. Now it's about 90 minutes. It's in English. I highly recommend it. Give you some more context. I mean, I'm not going to fucking sugarcoat it. I, for some reason, this week got some of the worst horrific bombing Gaza videos that I've ever seen. worse than like the beginning for some reason. I don't know how it got through. I try to filter that stuff out. But I saw the same one a little bit over and over again. And I'll tell you what, boy, you think we don't fuck with the Democrats now? You better come over to the winning side. Jump on board for the big win. I mean, I remember who didn't stand up against apartheid in South Africa, but maybe you don't. Maybe people will forget. Maybe now is a good time to fucking make the switch and say we're not taking fucking blood money. But Trump seems like he's in for it. He's got Kushner's college roommate as like one of his envoys, who apparently is really good. Was dealing directly with Hamas. The thing about Trump is he doesn't put up with a lot of bullshit. Like, he doesn't want to hear your bullshit. And I don't think like Netanyahu could be like, hey, how are you making a deal with the Houthis? He'd be like, I don't give a fuck about it. I made a deal. I make deals. I don't care about
that. For better or worse, he
doesn't care. He doesn't care about that stuff. If it looks bad, he'll be like, yeah, we're not doing it. I just won't do it. So, you know what? There you go. You know, you wonder why these things happen? Well, why don't you try to learn a little bit of a lesson? We tried to tell you. You didn't want to hear it. Joe Biden probably couldn't hear it. That guy's in another world right now. That poor guy. I'm trying to still get him on before he would, that thing. I feel like the clock might be ticking on that one.
They found a nodule.
Oh boy. That's never good. Nodule? Where'd they find this nodule?
On his prostate.
Oh man. Joe. Joe. Try to get into the studio as fast as you can, man. I'd love to hear us tell you some stories about when I met you at the Sears in 1984. All that. Come on in, because it doesn't. It doesn't sound great. Anyway, Bill, thank you for coming in.
Anytime.
I very much appreciate it. How's it going? How's it going otherwise? How's Everett? Good.
He's great, I'd say. Yeah, he's like 9.5 months old.
Incredible.
It's a real joy.
He looks like he knows what's up. He strikes me as a lad who knows the score.
I hope so.
Carl, how are the Blue Rocks doing? I hear that they're very bad.
Oh, it's really rough out there.
They're not really scoring runs or getting a lot of people out.
No, they're not.
Well, that's not great.
But the last one I went to, they held it 2-2 until the 10th inning, and then they immediately gave up 3 runs.
Last year.
Yeah, it's possible. And now he's batting like 900 OPS in the major leagues. We do not have anybody who seems to be at that level right now in the Blue Rocks.
Now, what the fuck is OPS?
On base plus slugging.
Slugging. Yeah.
This is fucking bullshit. The real stuff.
You know.
Give me RBIs.
What was Roberto Clemente's OBS?
Probably nobody, pretty good.
It's nobody. Probably like in the 900s or over 1,000. I mean, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
People like watching baseball like this. Like running, like we did. You go to Zip Code Wilmington to learn how to watch baseball? is that a course you can take 90 days at Zip Code? And you can learn. You can learn all this shit.
Sabermetrics.
Yeah, you can learn all this shit. You can't watch baseball unless you do this.
So, well, you know what? He's number four. What position does he play though?
Shortstop. Okay, so there you go. Okay. I'm all in on Caleb Wilmavita. That's where I'm at.
He bats fourth and he's batting .213.
No, he bats like second.
That's even worse.
He's the fourth overall prospect.
That's where your best hitter should go.
Folks, I'm sorry that I started this whole thing. We're going to have to run a proc univariate on the Blue Rocks and see what the fuck is going on over there.
I'm saying Caleb Wilmavita, he's the guy.
God, sorry for this aside. Like a year ago, Cormier did a story about the blank attraction signs on I-95. I don't know, in either direction. One is right near Frawley Stadium. One is, I guess, to the north of the city as you're coming in. They remain blank a year later, which I just think is amazing. It is
so he
such
did a story
dump.
On the blank billboards.
Yeah.
That are still blank now.
Yeah. I don't know.
We should have led with that. Like, we buried the lead.
Yeah. Zero attractions, apparently. But I will say, no, the Blue Rocks are a real favorite of mine. something to show some civic pride.
Well, that's enough. I hope to be back next week with Frank. Frank, get well soon. We will be talking to him about the fact that he did go to high school with the Pope. We were going to talk about that with him tonight. We couldn't, but we will. We absolutely will. We want to know everything about the Pope. We're going to find out whether the Pope was good at sports, whether maybe before he was the Pope, whether he got a little, you know what I'm talking about. Whether he drank, maybe did a little toke. Let's find out.
Was he woke?
What is woke? Was he not woke? You know, was he an asshole? Maybe he was an asshole. We don't know. But we'll find out next week here on the Highlands Bunker podcast. Goodbye, Lefty Fest.